It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolfworth, and today we are doing a fun show. We're talking about pets and getting advice and feedback about how to take care of your animals. Anchorage is about the dog craziest town I've ever seen. I mean, there are dogs everywhere, and the dog parks are not the only place you run into them. So I'm sure there are a lot of listeners out there who probably have questions and concerns and things that they'd like to know about. And in the studio today, we actually have two veterinarians and a dog. Everyone was disappointed I didn't bring in my little white dog, but I think that we would probably end up with a wet carpet if I did that, because I'm not a dog behavior expert like one of my guests who brought in Caterpillar, who is a five-year-old boxer, and will probably be totally silent because probably well behaved. So I have two guests. Nina Stebbins is a veterinarian with Alaska Veterinary Clinic. Thanks for being with us, Nina.
Thanks for having me.
And Mandy Seymour is also a veterinarian. She's at VCA Alaska Pet Care and has an emphasis on behavior and is working towards being a behavior specialist.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. I am interested in what kind of pet behavior issues you run up against. Probably my little dog's problem is a fairly common one.
It's always a fun question. I get to see a realm of interesting behaviors. I had a pet that every time his owner would leave, he would run and slam his body against the door repeatedly.
Oh, how sad.
We were able to get that fixed with some distraction techniques and such. I see a lot of leash aggression and leash reactivity. That's a huge problem up here, and just dog aggression, given how many dogs we have in the area.
Yeah.
But then I also see dogs with anxiety issues, fear, biting issues, just fear in general and those kinds of things. Uh-huh. So, and separation anxiety is another big one.
Dog psychologist.
Yeah, right? More or less.
Yeah,
and
well.
Even and some obsessive compulsive problems.
And their psychology, their little mental world is can be very, in some ways it can be very obvious, in other ways it can be very mysterious. I'm thinking of my own dog. When I'm at the cabin, she gets to run free and loves it, runs around the wilderness. Mm-hmm. But then you bring a leash out, and she comes running up to you because she wants to go for a walk. And I think, well, isn't that weird, right?
Yeah.
So they have these little ways of thinking that we have to get used to. Nina, you said you worked in an emergency setting, and that sounds really, really challenging. And now you're working more with daytime with dogs who just need checkups and stuff. What was the reason for making that switch?
Well, emergency work, you see a lot of the worst case scenarios, and when that's all you see every day, all night, after 2.5 years, I just needed some happy puppies.
Yeah.
And just routine stuff. I do miss the cases and the people I work with and all of that, but it's just fun to be able to now see my rechecks and have that relationship that I couldn't have on emergency. And we moved. So.
So what we're going to do today's show is we're going to learn about what it's like being a veterinarian. And we're also going to get some advice on preventive care and dealing with emergencies and what to feed your dog and behavior, how to get your dog to do what you think it should do. But we also want to take your questions. Maybe you have an issue with your own animal that you'd like to bounce off our experts. The phone number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. If you're outside Anchorage, is 888-353-5752. And the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So Dr. Seymour, I am interested in how you go about doing this behavioral adjustment. are you training the owner, or are you training the dog, or both?
I'm training the owner to train the dog.
Okay.
So I spend a lot of time gathering a very thorough history. There's a long questionnaire that has to be filled out beforehand because it gets the owners to think about what's going on with their pet, and it gives me a much clearer indication, and that speeds up my history-taking process. But even so, it still is about 45 minutes to an hour of just asking questions and listening to what's been going on so that I can formulate a diagnosis, and then we work on active treatment plans. A lot of it centers around, depending on the problem, desensitizing the dog to the stimulus that scares them, and then counterconditioning. So changing their emotional response from a fear-based one to one that's positive, associated with treats, toys, affection, praise, play, those kinds of things. So
when you say fear-based. I mean, mm-hmm. there's been an evolution over the decades about how to best train a dog what's most effective.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of studies have really shown that positive training techniques, giving a reward that the dog thinks is a reward for appropriate behavior and trying to ignore or redirect inappropriate behaviors is really gives the greatest success. And it allows the dogs the opportunity to engage in their own learning versus shutting down because they're not sure if the next move will be wrong.
Right. So if you call the dog and the dog takes too long to come mm-hmm. and you're unhappy with that, doesn't make any sense to yell at the dog at that point because then the dog thinks he was bad to come, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're not going to want to come to you. And that's come is tough because we often think they know it better than they do. Uh-huh. So the fact that your dog came is still pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. We often we use the word all the time and don't expect them to come. We say it in the house, come here, and then they don't. We're like, okay, fine. So we actually muddy the word and it doesn't mean that much. So it's better to train it very specifically, often with a different, I like to use the word front, but a different word that you only have a specific expectation, just like we have a specific expectation of sit. But for come, we tend to just throw it out at them all the time. And then we ask them to come in these high distracting situations from 50 yards away. And we never practiced it from 10 yards away. So right. Yeah, they're not as successful.
Yeah. Well, I have so many more questions on that topic and many others, but we have a caller now. Jerry is calling from Kinnick. Jerry?
Yeah. Hi. I got a couple questions there real quick.
Hello.
One is I got a 6-month-old black German Shepherd. The fella told me that she was purebred. How can I determine if she is? I do not have any papers on her. And the other half of the question is, will it hurt if I get her shots? She's 6 months. He said she has all her shots, but I cannot find a veterinarian who did this or anything. I called about 20 of them the other day.
Oh, wow.
So you're afraid that maybe the dog hasn't had the shot, so you want to get another round. You're wondering, will that be harmful to get another round?
So as for the vaccine...
That's correct, and whether she is actually a full-blooded German Shepherd.
Mm-hmm. So as for the vaccines, at 6 months, she should have all her vaccines. If you don't have proof of that, especially the rabies certificate, not just the tag doesn't really mean a whole lot without the paper behind it, then you should go to your vet and at least get her boosted to make sure that you have the legality of her rabies and she's up to date and has good immunity.
So having too many shots is not a bad thing?
Not necessarily, no.
Okay.
If you're not sure.
Yeah. I would agree in this case. It's better to know she's young, otherwise healthy, and should be okay.
Better to be on the safe side. And is there a way to tell if a dog's breeding if you don't have the papers?
Well, there are about 3 different DNA tests available, ranging between like $70 to $100 that you can get. For determining purebred dogs, they're decently accurate. For determining mixed dogs, the results are quite variable. So it's up to you on if you want to pursue that. But there's no way that you can get like an AKC paper off of a DNA test like that. So
it'd be informational just for me then.
Yeah, yeah.
So you wouldn't be able to go out and sell the dog for more or anything unless somebody...
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, no, I'm keeping her. We're buddies for life.
All right.
Good.
That's good to hear.
Love hearing that.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling, Jerry.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. If there's others out there who have questions about animals, the number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752 if you want to call toll-free. And the email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. Those come to me here in the studio, and I can read them on the air. Dr. Stebbins, let's talk about shots. What are the sort of the main things that the shots are for? I mean, rabies obviously is mm-hmm. a huge issue that is not very common, right? But if it is, it's a horrible, 100% fatal disease. So we have to be careful of that. But what are the other things that are more for the dog or the cat's benefit?
So there's what everyone calls the booster, the distemper shot, and that has the distemper parvo. And different clinics have different protocols, but those are the main two that are in it. That's just to make sure that they don't get these diseases that can potentially be deadly. And then the Bordetella is a good idea if they go to groomers, dog parks, anywhere like that. Now, nothing is 100% guaranteed, and with the Board of Televaccine, we're just trying to keep them from getting severe disease. It doesn't mean they won't be exposed to it. So they may still have a cough or something, but we're trying to keep them from having pneumonia and it progressing.
Is that also called kennel cough? Is
mm-hmm,
that the same thing?
It's the same thing, yeah.
And they won't let you even take the dog to board somewhere without that, or at least
correct.
Often won't.
Yeah. And so it's just to make sure that they have good immunity for themselves. The rabies is required by law because it is something that if the animal becomes infected with it, and can transmit it to another human. And no, it's not very common, but I just saw that where I'm from in Middle Tennessee, they just had two dogs that tested positive for rabies.
Oh, so wow.
It's really scary when it happens, because if you have kids or other people in your family, you have to worry about that.
Mm-hmm. And there are wild animals in Alaska that probably have reservoirs mm-hmm. of rabies. Yeah.
The wolf population and the Arctic fox, and as well as the bats mm-hmm. down in the southeast.
Yeah. What about cats? What shots do they need?
So they need the rabies as well. Even if they don't go outside, they're required to have it by law. I don't care if they ever leave your house. They still have to have their rabies up to date.
Okay.
And then they get another booster that is kind of helps with their upper respiratory and things like that.
Is there any kind of shot for feline leukemia? I know that's a real killer of a lot of cats.
Yeah, there is. I ideally test before I vaccinate any animal for it, because I want to know if they have it or not before I vaccinate. So we test for feline leukemia and feline AIDS. We vaccinate for feline leukemia, but we do not vaccinate for feline AIDS, because once they're vaccinated, they always test positive. And if mm-hmm. your cat ever gets out and is tested, they will always show positive. And unless you have a way to identify it, whoever finds your cat's going to think it's positive and going to be sick versus has mm-hmm. immunity. So they always have a risk of that, but yeah, there is a vaccine for leukemia.
What is the cost of like getting the making sure your animal like has all the shots that they should have? I mean, just ballpark. Either of you want to throw that out?
That can be extremely variable based on where you are, because uh-huh. with the shots, you should also be getting a yearly exam, which is
right.
actually almost more important than mm-hmm. some of the vaccines based on a pet's lifestyle. And that can range from $50 to $75, depending on the clinic that you're at. And shots can range anywhere from $15 to $40, again, depending on where you go. If you go to the shelter, if you're going to other places, it can be very variable.
Right.
Really important thing, though, is that you're establishing a relationship with a veterinarian. You're getting a full comprehensive workup on your pet, because they can't tell us when things hurt. And so you are really kind of relying on our ability to know them. And the better we know them, the better we can pick up on abnormalities.
All right. Let's go to Joel, who's calling. Joel?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I was wondering if by getting a puppy and a kitten at the same time, if they would be more likely to grow up as buddies. I know sometimes cats get along with dogs, and sometimes they don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting question.
Overall, yes. There can be times where they'll get along, or they won't get along, but for the most part, kittens are going to be more accepting. Kittens that are raised with dogs tend to prefer dogs over cats, and most dogs, as long as they don't have predatory aggression issues, pretty much anything that will play with them, they'll play back when they're puppies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen some cats and dogs. They didn't know if they were a cat or a dog.
Yeah, one of my cats likes dogs better than he likes cats. He loves when I have guests over that have dogs. He's right there.
Thank you very much.
Good question, yeah. Joel. I mean, it brings up this point of personality. I mean, that these animals have personalities. They have likes. They have dislikes. Some of them are cranky and mm-hmm. some of them are lovable. And my uncle and aunt had this wonderful story of their cat who kind of nursed a sick dog along, you know, was there taking mm-hmm. care of him and then would tease him and stuff, mm-hmm. just like people.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is important if you're a first-time pet owner or thinking about getting a puppy, talk with somebody about the breed before you get it. Because if you're wanting a quiet dog versus an active dog, I've seen mismatching happens so often, and then the owners are just frustrated because mm-hmm. it's not the type of animal that they wanted.
There's a lot of good books on that subject mm-hmm. that have a lot of information about breeds, and you can go through and pick out the one you want. But then when you go to buy that particular breed of dog, you might find that it's very expensive or it's not available mm-hmm. in Alaska, whereas the dogs at the shelter tend to be
Mm-hmm. I mean, mixes or a nice blend of everything.
Now, there's, it seems, it looked to me when we got our dog that there were a lot of pit bulls at the shelter. And talk about that breed. I mean, either or both of you. I mean, they obviously have a terrible reputation. And if you've got kids at home, you're sort of worried about getting a pit bull out of the shelter. Thoughts?
They have a terrible reputation, but they are not terrible dogs. Yeah. They are a dog that has certain certain instincts that we have bred, which when provoked can cause problems. So instead of a Cocker Spaniel that would tend to run up, nip, and run away, they tend to bite harder and hold on. We bred them to do that. So and they're powerful, powerful, powerful dogs. But in general, they're by no means more aggressive or more likely to bite than any other breed of dog. And it's actually been shown that they're less likely than a lot of breeds of dogs. Small breeds of dogs are more likely to bite. They just don't tend to get reported as often because the damage is less.
Right. So it's a probability of a problem is low, but impact is high.
Yeah. But
I love pit bulls.
They have wonderful, wonderful personalities. The only thing that doesn't do it for me is those tails hurt like heck when they hit you with all the happiness.
But when you're getting a dog from the shelter, you don't really know what it's, if it's been mistreated in the past, if it's got problems. I mean, how do you, if you were getting a dog from the shelter, either of you, how would you make that decision?
By evaluating it. Testing it out, trying different techniques. But I think in our case, we kind of know what to look for. Some people, dogs communicate by body language. And if you don't know how to read that, it can be a really bad situation if you push them too far. So if you do get a dog from the shelter and it has unwanted behavior, you go see Dr. Seymour. Yes.
So give me an example of what you would be looking for in evaluating a dog's personality, whether it's like good for a family.
All of my dogs are rescued. I've gone to shelters to go get them. I'm kind of one of the weird vets out there that doesn't just adopt ones that end up at the clinic. Because even though they're not the healthiest in the world, I love a dog with a smushed face. And so for me, I want a dog that fits my personality. I'm very lazy, and I like to go for walks, flat walks. And I like to have dogs that'll go with me. And then when they get home, they're on the couch and they're done. So boxers are great for me. And I have two little dogs. I have a Shih Tzu and a pug schnauzer thing. But I want a dog that is happy, motivated by love and treats, and that is kind of laid back. So I tend to look for what kind of handling they're willing to accept from me and what kind of interest that they show in me. So it's a little tricky to describe.
But how do you figure that out? I mean, from when you're just meeting a dog for the first time, you're just sort of like looking at their behavior and sort of...
And talk to the people there. They know the dogs. They've messed with them. They're with them in an every day. So ask about personalities or tell them what you're looking for and they can help direct you. And I have kids, so my thing would be taking my kids with me. How does the dog interact with my child? How is my child doing with the dog? Do I see that... I mean, kids are scary to animals. They're sticky. They're loud. They make weird movements. And so seeing, does the dog shy away from my kid or run right up to it, and that would be really important to me too.
Here's a question coming in by email from Robin. It says, asks, what would prevention and first aid be? She's suggesting doing a whole show on this, but let's just ask this one question for now. What would, for prevention and first aid for taking a dog into the backcountry? So supposing you're going on a rafting trip or a backpacking trip, what would you want to take along?
Great question.
So
I'll let the emergency doc field at first.
Well, the biggest thing would be some sort of bandage absorbent material in case they get a cut or something, so you can wrap it, some sort of sterile water, saline, something to just clean out a dirty wound and wrap it until you can have them seen. Personally, I would take pain medicine, but not everybody has that on hand.
Right, I wouldn't even know where to get such a thing.
There's not much safe to use over the counter.
Not at all. Not at all. Yeah. So we're lucky in that we usually have our own little pharmacies at home for our animals. But
Neosporin is good. I agree. Bandage, some way to flush out a wound, similar to what you would take for yourself.
Right. Your own first aid kit would probably be adequate.
Yeah.
Right.
For the most part, it is. Other things, though, would be like having an extra light T-shirt because we can't bandage certain areas of their body very easily. Mm. But if you had a T-shirt and they got a cut on their chest, you could protect it. And also kind of consider how far you could carry your dog back.
Right.
If something were to happen, having some device that could help you carry them if need be.
Well, there's a lot of bad Alaskan things that can happen to dogs. And one of them we've been hearing a lot about recently is traps. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, is this something that you guys, is this a big issue here in Anchorage that dogs are getting injured, or is it more of a concern that people have that they could get injured? Are you seeing dogs that have been in traps coming into the clinics?
I'm personally not, but yeah. I would see how it could be a big problem.
In mm-hmm. Anchorage proper, no, that might be a bigger issue for some of the more outlying veterinary clinics. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a doctor over at VCA Bering Sea who does own a dog that's legs got caught in a trap, and he now has little prosthetic limbs in the back.
Wow.
That he gets to put on his legs every day to go.
One thing I would suggest is Department of Fish and Game does have a video on their website about how to open a trap, because if you get your animal in a trap and don't know how to open the trap, it could be a really difficult situation. Mm-hmm. What are some other sort of outdoor hazards that the animals face when they're going out with their owners? Porcupines, I guess.
Porcupines are a fun one, yeah. And with porcupines, even though it looks really bad, it's actually better to just leave it alone and get them to a vet to sedate them before you pull those out, because they do have barbs at the end and they can really hurt coming back out.
Okay. Yeah. So don't just try to jerk them out.
It's not the wisest. Plus, we also need to sedate them and really check their mouths very, very well. And that can be hard to do when they're awake. So,
Is that a life-threatening thing for an animal to get porcupine quilled, or is it more just a painful, sad thing?
Not in the immediate. If a quill migrates, it could possibly become a problem later in life, but usually in the immediate, they're just uncomfortable, and you have the time to get them to someone who can give them some pain medication before they go about plucking those out of there.
Okay.
Yeah. One of the other things I saw was long hikes where you're in and out of water or something like that, dogs will go and literally walk off the pads of their feet. Mm-hmm. And so there's really not a whole lot you can do. That's where the bandage material would come in handy, something to keep the bandage from getting wet.
So mushers use booties on their dogs for that reason.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So just padding their feet, getting on pain medicine.
I find that's the biggest problem. The first really nice melt that we have, everyone goes for long hikes, and then they have to come see us afterwards because the dogs had too much fun.
Yeah.
And their feet are soft from being kind of in the winter all along the time, so they're not calloused up enough.
Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that folks know how they can reach us with questions about animals. We have two veterinarians in the studio, Nina Stebbins, who's with the Alaska Veterinarian Clinic, and Mandy Seymour, who is with VCA Alaska Pet Care and also has an emphasis in her practice on animal behavior. The phone number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage is 888-353-5752. And if you'd like to join us with a question by email, it's hometown@alaskapublic.org. One big question folks have is dog food, and what is the best kind, and how much should you spend, and all that. And I wonder if there's kinds of dog food that you should avoid, or if, what your thoughts might be on that. Did you want to take that one, Nina?
Sure. Yeah. So my opinion on dog food is the biggest thing you want to look for is that your dog likes it and they're doing well with it. They're not having too much gas. They're eating it. They're not vomiting. And they like it. What I look for over-the-counter foods is just the companies that have been around for a long time. So I really like Purina and Iams over-the-counter. I think they're good companies. Mm-hmm. It's all about the quality of the food in it, which you can't tell by looking at the bag or anything like that. And so it can be very emotional to pick a food because a lot of people want the best food for their dog.
And they've seen the advertising.
They've seen the marketing, and some companies go along with certain trends just because that's what the public wants, not necessarily what the animal needs. And so really, it doesn't matter. As long as they like it, as long as it's a good quality food, then that's really what counts.
Crunchy food is better than the canned food, true?
Not necessarily, no.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay.
So it's a matter of just trying different foods till you find the one that you think is best.
Yeah, and if you're going to try different foods.
Or there's
foods,
any to avoid, put it that way.
there's to name names.
Yeah, yeah. Not the name. There's probably a lot of foods out there to avoid. One of the things that I recommend looking for is actually looking at the AFCO statement.
Yes.
Because the requirements for what's needed
what's
on
AFCO?
A...
It's a little seal on the bag that says that they've passed a usually a computer-generated analysis of the food to make sure that the minimum requirements are there.
So a nutritionist there.
And there's actually very few requirements for pet food as far as what makes it good. So it can be quite easy to make your food look good. You can get chicken as the first ingredient by leaving the bones in when you do that versus putting just the meat in. So there's all sorts of interesting ways to manipulate how the bag is. So one of the things I like to look at is whether or not it's been formulated to meet the needs or if it's actually been tested to meet the needs. Because otherwise, if it's been formulated, your dog is actually the test subject for that food. Mm. So I prefer to have my foods checked on some really well taken care of facility dogs that do and cats that just have the best lives. Sorry, my dog is kissing Mina.
Yeah, we, if you're hearing a background noise, that's our third guest, Caterpillar, who's a 5-year-old boxer. And we're talking obviously about animal today. Wendy had a question about behavior. Wendy?
Hi, thank you. I have a roughly 18-month-old Boston Terrier who does a very good sit-stay when there's not any other stimuli around. Mm-hmm. But if someone comes to the front door, she goes so ballistic that I'm worried she's going to go through our front window.
Yeah, that is a common problem. Your solution is give your dog to me, and I will love her and hug her and call her George. So what we need to do there, and it's a really common issue that folks do present to me, is when the doorbell rings, our focus tends to be on letting the guest in versus what our dog is doing. So we first need to practice with no one on the other side of the door what we want her to do just to open the door. So I would put her in a sit stay and just walk towards the door. And if she breaks the sit stay, we just put her back in it. Or we have someone over there feeding her treats to keep her in that sit stay. And we just practice opening the door with no one on the other side. Then we can mimic the doorbell sound, record it on your phone or whatever, play it, and then practice it again with no one on the other side of the door so that she never gets to perform that behavior and get the reward of someone coming in the house or getting to see who's there. So you have to really break it down into small steps for them.
Hmm. Interesting.
Thank you so much. Do you have time for a second question, not behavioral?
Well, if it's we have several other callers, so why don't we go take some of those, and if you want to call back in another 15 minutes or so.
Let you go. Thank you very much for your help.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you for calling, Wendy. Now let's go to Jim, who's calling from Wasilla. Jim?
Yes, I had a question about parasites and how that might affect small children or people that might be health impaired.
Yeah,
dogs like to, people like to kiss their dog or whatever they call it.
Yeah, that's a really big concern. So from what I'm told up here, parasites are not extremely common. We do have a lot of Giardia, especially if you go hiking and things like that. So, and that's something that you can get from your dog or something. So that can make you really sick. And then there are other types of parasites that small children, immunocompromised people can get. So it's important to do yearly fecals, look for parasites, deworm them as needed. And just good hygiene. So if they go outside and like to roll around in their poop, give them a bath often or wipe them off with baby wipes and just physically get that off of them, cleaning up the feces and just good hygiene to wash your hands and try not to let them lick you in your mouth, which can be hard.
It's gross, in my opinion, but you're saying that's probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
For the immunocompromised and children, it is not a good idea. Most healthy adults, it's a low, low risk.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling. We're going to take a break in just a minute, but let's take this call from Todd first. Todd's calling from Anchorage.
Hello.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Great show. Appreciate it. I'll take my answer off the air. I was just curious about if you guys had heard of a book by David Grimm called The Citizen Canine. It's about our evolving relationship with our cats and dogs particularly, but with our pets and how they're kind of getting a different perspective from us over time and how that's sort of working out socially. It was just published recently. I'm just curious if you have any thoughts. Thanks.
I haven't seen that one as yet, but it sounds very interesting. I really love reading cultural and evolutionary changes and I'm reading one right now called Rabid, The Cultural History of the Most Diabolical Disease, and it's really interesting.
Right. We're kind of evolving together, aren't we?
Yeah.
Us and dogs.
Yeah, especially.
They are such an amazing, interesting evolutionary thing that they are able to have all of this incredible variety within one species.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about animals and take your questions. I'll give those phone numbers out as soon as we return from our break. Stick with us as Hometown Alaska continues.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and our topic today is animals, pets, keeping your pet healthy, keeping your pet behaving itself and doing what it's supposed to do. And I've got two veterinarians in the studio with me, and in a moment I'm going to give you the phone number and email address so that you can pose your own questions about problems or thoughts you might be having about your pets. Dr. Nina Stebbins is a veterinarian with Alaska Veterinary Clinic. And Dr. Mandy Seymour is a veterinarian with VCA Alaska Pet Care and also has an emphasis in her practice on behavior. And her 5-year-old boxer, Caterpillar, is in the studio demonstrating good behavior. So that's her calling card. And Nina also has a lot of experience with emergencies with pets. So if you have a question, our phone number here is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. There's a toll-free number from outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752. And email is a good way to get to us with your questions. The email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And if you go to the alaskapublic.org website, you can find our show today, Pet Sounds. You'll have to dig around a little bit. We have a redesigned website, but if you look at the tab for programs at the top, you can find Hometown Alaska. And there are a lot of links that our veterinarian guests have been kind enough to share with us that have more information. So here's a question from an email listener. What do you do about dogs that jump up on you? My dog Mika jumps up and kisses me when I get home from work. I don't mind, but when she does it to guests, I'm worried they won't like it. And probably a lot of them don't. And this is Kate's question. How do you train a dog not to jump up, especially on guests?
Another really good question. It can be hard when there's two different standards. One is it's okay to jump up, and then other times it's not okay. So you can either put her jumping up on you on cue so that she has a specific command for jumping up first, but she needs to sit first to be greeted. Or you can teach her an alternative behavior when guests come over. So having her sit, giving her treats for sitting when guests come over, and sometimes even just having them on leash initially so that they can't run over and do the behavior you don't want them to do anyway until they get an opportunity to learn and get rewarded for doing what you do want them to do.
So you really emphasize positive training.
Mm-hmm.
And What about using the word no? I mean, is it possible if a dog knows it, what no means don't do that? You could use that for a variety of behaviors you don't want them to do, right? Or is that, do you think that's a bad idea?
It depends on how you're using it. We tend to say it's kind of like come. We use no all the time. It probably does not mean that much to most dogs. You know, it's the old cartoon from Gary Larson. Hi, my name is no, 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 bad dog, no. You know, and so it's... You can use, I tend to use sounds as distractors if they're doing something like a whistle or a click or little kind of sound just to get their attention on me. But then I want to call them over, ask them to perform a command, and then reward that kind of thing. No, it just ends up getting used an awful lot, and do they really know what we want them to not be doing? That's a broad thing that we're trying to ask them to do.
It's this communication problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's hear from Chris. He's calling in with a question about meeting other dogs on the trail. Chris?
Yeah, hi. Great Hello. Show, and I just thank you very much. I just wanted to ask, I'm one of those rare Alaskans who doesn't have a dog.
Oh.
And,
we can fix that.
Yeah, I was going to say, we can fix that for you.
Yeah, I know. I'm allergic to dogs and cats, and, mm-hmm. and I like them and all, but I really can't be around them. And so, you know, I'm on the trail, I'll be walking or whatever in the park, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, you know, this dog just comes up. And I also have a problem, like, dogs have a tendency to go one way or another with me, and I mm-hmm. don't know why, but they either really like me or really, like, just start barking at me and nipping.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I don't know why that is, but I was wondering, is there a way, how can I deal with that? How can I deal with, you know, meeting these dogs and, you know, get them off me right away? Mm-hmm. And, you know, not,
I think it's a great question, you know. Yeah, and there's plenty of people who are good dog owners in Anchorage, yeah. and there are plenty of people who are really bad dog owners in Anchorage and let their dogs, you know, scare kids and chase people around and do all kinds of stuff. And how can we, obviously, from the dog owner's perspective, you could be polite and behave properly, but mm-hmm. assuming there are going to be people out there like that, what can mm-hmm. you do as just an innocent bystander is being bothered yep. by a dog?
So I get this asked a lot with people who have dogs that are on leash, and we have the exact same problem, only they have a reactive dog as well. So how I tend to deal with those situations are, one, if you kind of stand up tall with your chest up and you kind of do a hand motion from point your hand, palm out, fingers down, and bring it straight up in front of you and ask for a sit in kind of a loud voice, 50% of dogs will. They're just so confused by that. And they're like, oh, okay, I'll sit. So you can ask a dog to sit before it gets to you. You can turn your back to it and just wait and ignore it and walk the other way for a little bit until you can potentially pop off the trail. I often have treats with me when I'm training, so I tend to get dogs that want to come hang out with me anyway, and so I do a lot of just moving my back to them to, because I don't want to give other people's dogs treats if I don't know if they have allergies or anything like that. So I just kind of move and ignore them, and I keep my motions very calm and slow, and most dogs will give up after a while and wander away. So if you just sort of turn your back to the dog and ignore it and try and find yourself a little alcove to step off into, that's probably going to be your best way of dealing with it.
Yeah, yeah, it's a tough situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think for dog owners, it's important to remember that if you meet a human being, yep. should assume that they don't like dogs until you know otherwise, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
assuming that they're comfortable with your dog is probably mm-hmm. not a great assumption. And if they are comfortable, then no harm done. Marnie's calling with a question from Anchorage. Marnie?
Yeah, greetings all. We have two black labs, male and female. And I'm wondering if you have any advice on how to manage the acidic pee from the female. Otherwise, she's in good health, but it's just a plant and grass killer.
Hmm.
There are a couple of different products out there. It can be a little tricky sometimes. There are some supplements that you could talk to your vet about getting if you're consistently getting that urine. I would actually check to find out what the pH is first on a regular basis, because they can kind of burn the grass either way.
Okay.
You kind of want to aim for neutral. So finding out what the pH is, and then your veterinarian can help get you. So sometimes you can just change the food, and the food will, by the way it's designed, change the pH. So there are certain diets that are created to do that. And then there's sometimes some supplements that can be added.
If the supplements are added, I mean, is there any chance of forming, you know, kidney stones or anything? Or it's generally in your experience, it's safe?
Usually they're utilized. So one is potassium citrate is used to alkalinize the urine, and the other one is vitamin C used to acidify the urine. So So it's kind of you have to find out though where the urine is truly sitting first.
That's great. We'll do it. Thanks for your help.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good to know. A little chemistry experiment inside your dog.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It's Hometown Alaska. We're talking about pets today. Two veterinarians in the studio, Nina Stebbins and Mandy Seymour, also taking questions about animal health as well as behavior. And if you have a question, you can get on the air with us quite easily. just call 550-8433, 550-8433. That's for within the Anchorage area. If you're calling from outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752. And the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So I was curious. We haven't talked much about cats, and cats are seem like they're the outdoor cat issue is a big one because we know that they can kill a lot of birds, and when cats go feral, they can cause a lot of community problems. Some people feel like it's not that humane to keep a cat indoors all the time. Nina, would you address the indoor outdoor cat issue? What kind of advice do you have for folks on that?
So, of course, this is my personal opinion, but I don't allow my cats to go outside because there's so many risks that they can get hurt. And so if you do allow your cats outside, you have to understand there's a higher chance of them getting hit by a car, attacked by something, biting other animals, abscesses, toxins, a wide range of things. And then there is the environmental concerns with birds and things like that. So, as long as you do behavioral things in the house, I think that they can be happy in the house. My cats are happy in the house. You have vertical space. If you have multiple animals, make sure that they can have their own alone time because cats actually like to be alone. And so make sure they can get away from other animals, get up high because they like to climb trees. And so mine love their window seat. And just keeping them enriched in the house makes them happy. I think I prefer it that way. That's just my opinion.
Cats can do a lot of damage with their claws. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like it's humane to remove the claws? Is that something people commonly do?
They do. I will remove claws, but I don't like to do it. And I always talk with the owners before I'll remove any cat's claws because it's a very painful procedure. I mean, you're literally taking off. If you look at your finger and your fingernail, you're taking that joint. So it's not a benign procedure. It does hurt. It can have chronic pain. And it's hard to train them not to do things sometimes, but it can be done versus the severe complications of having their toes removed because it's not just their claws. You're removing their toe, the tip of their toe. Mm-hmm. And they can have behavioral problems from that because it's a very traumatic experience to have that done. They're in pain. And then they can never go outside because they can't defend themselves. So they have to be an indoor cat at that point.
Teaching them to scratch on what you want to scratch them on is actually easier than most people think. Cats can be trained. They just have different motivators than dogs do.
Yes.
So, I agree. There's a few rare circumstances where it's the cat's life or the cat's toes. And then we talk, but we have a long lot of conversation. There's a lot of things that can be done behaviorally before we get to that point.
Okay.
And I wanted to address the outside
issue
as
well. Go right ahead.
There are some great in-between opportunities, such as taking your cat for a walk on a harness, just so long as you know that wandering behind your cat is kind of what you're doing, not like walking your dog. You go where the
patient,
cat goes.
Right.
But there's also something called the perfect fence that you can create safe spaces in your yard and keep your cat in your yard, but they have the access to go out. So there are some safe fencing options that are possible for cats to give them that outside opportunity without just it being running amok kind of thing. The same type of safety you'd want for your dog. We keep them in a fenced area so they can enjoy the outside, but be safe.
Okay, interesting. Here's an email from Jean. She says, my pet peeve is that dog people do not pick up after their dogs. How do you train them to do that? This is a behavior question. Especially bikers, skiers, and runners whose off-leash dogs are trailing behind them. Of course, being off-leash is not strictly legal in Anchorage, but you sure see a lot of it. Of course, the owners do not see their dogs poop, so have an excellent excuse not to pick up. Mm-hmm. If all the dog owners got tickets for off-leash or not picking up, the muni would have a windfall. There are currently no enforcement of either regulation. Of course, this is a big health issue for a lot of us and probably for animals, too. I don't know if our vets could really comment on that.
I can comment on what I do as a pet owner. I try to pay it forward when I'm at the park and I pick up other stool that I see because I know there's going to be ones that I miss. So just trying to remind everyone to be as responsible as possible, and we're all in this together, and it's our city. And so if we all help take care of it, we'll, hopefully not have as much problem for other people who aren't dog people.
Yeah, sounds like a good answer to me. And I'm not sure if I totally understand this question. Maybe you will. The question from Doug is, can you please comment about on concerns about beavers in some areas? Is it just University Lake or more widespread? Maybe concern about beaver dog conflicts or
no?
One of my clients, she wrote me an email once, and she goes, "It finally happened. The beaver got Sam." Yeah, those beavers down at University Lake are kind of aggressive, but they have good reason. We've got dogs rolling all over their dams where they're keeping their pups. So, and then beavers can transmit Giardia. So, drinking University Lake water, you will want to have your yearly fecal tests checked. But for the most part, when you're worried about dogs and wildlife, you need to work on your dog's come before you actually need them to come to you. Because the wildlife, if they're mad enough, they're going to come after your dog and they can do some serious damage. So really working on a solid recall long before you need it.
Keep your dog away from wildlife.
Yeah.
I mean, a moose will kill a dog very easily.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
and dogs that chase moose make it so moose is less likely to survive.
Yeah.
Because moose need their energy. Another question, this is from Marie. What are good alternatives for food for dogs that can be made at home, not the store-bought dry or wet dog food? So making your dog food at home, ideas on that?
So making your dog food at home is, I'm not a good cook, but there's a lot that goes into doing that. And so there are a couple of websites available that have veterinary nutritionists on consult. www.balanceit.com is a really good resource, and they can actually help you create a well-balanced diet for your dog's needs. So if you want to cook for your dog, you just need to make sure that what you're cooking is actually getting them the minerals and the vitamins that they need, because people, we don't eat the greatest diet in the world. We have eliminated a lot of the organs, meat that would give us those minerals, so we take vitamin pills. Dogs don't necessarily have that, and their requirements are different. So just making sure you're consulting with a veterinary nutritionist on that, or getting some of the books written by veterinary nutritionists is a good resource.
All right, good one.
Just doing vegetables and meat is not balanced for them. Mm-hmm. They have to have minerals added to a home-cooked diet.
Yep.
Oh, interesting. Susan has a comment or question about cats.
And yes.
We touched off a big topic there. Susan?
Yeah.
It's just a brief comment, and I'll just make my comment and let you talk about it. But as a cat lover and a gardener and a bird lover, I'd also like to remind people who choose to let their cats outdoors that they may have a much larger impact on the neighborhood than they expect, than the owners anticipate, and that we go to great lengths to cultivate a warm and loving space for songbirds, which our neighbor cats some think means that it's a buffet. So. Mm-hmm. Just a reminder.
some things you can do there. There's a device called a scarecrow, which is a motion-activated sprinkler system, basically. So you can set it up pointing out from your yard area, and that can help discourage the cats from entering.
Oh, interesting.
Or even the bells on the collars can sometimes help. Because cats, if they move enough,
my cats are pretty good with their bells.
Yeah, they're trained killers for sure.
Yeah.
Well, we just have a few minutes left, but if there are other callers who want to get on the air, the number here in Anchorage is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Got some emails to talk about. This is from Russell. And he has a nice email. It says, I just want to say thank you to Mandy Seymour, who saved my cat Orion when he was not feeling well and showed me how to give him subcutaneous fluids until he was nursed back to health.
Thank you.
While Orion is the best cat and the only cat I've ever liked, he is very, very demanding when it comes to food. Sounds like Garfield or something, right? We need him on a strict and scheduled diet because he's 15 pounds and gets some treats once in a while. What do you recommend for cats that are very demanding and vocal when it comes to food?
Some cats actually were the ones that teach them to be vocal for food because we think that's what they want, so we tend to give it to them. So it can be hard to break that habit once we're into it as well. But making him hunt for his food, hide little pieces of food around the house, there's plenty of interactive treat dispensing toys for cats, and it can make him work. I actually pretty much feed my cats out of this thing called a peek and play where they have to reach their arms in and grab out one piece of kibble at a time. It really cuts down on their annoyance around feeding time because they're having to work. They're spending more mental energy on getting their food, which in the end is what cats would be doing all day long, is getting their next meal. So that can be really helpful.
All right. Here's a caller with lots of comments on what you were saying, and probably don't have time for all of them, but I do want to read two of them. Points out that the leash law applies to cats in Anchorage. Never knew that, but it's a good thing to know. And on the question of how do you know the personality of a dog or cat at the animal control center, this Marilyn says yes, talk to the staff. The animals are temperament tested that are made available. If an animal has issues, the center will euthanize them rather than risk an animal being adopted. Also, there are a number of animal rescue groups in Anchorage and throughout Alaska that know the personalities of their rescues. Mm-hmm. So that's important information for sure.
Yeah. And it can be hard to evaluate dogs in the shelter setting because it's not a normal household setting. Mm-hmm. So some dogs are going to be more fearful than they might be otherwise. So it can be rough.
Yeah. Let's go to Jay. I think he had a comment or question on the same topic. Jay?
Yeah, I just got a comment. I've picked out a lot of dogs from the shelters and rescue centers over the years. And I think person should not be in a hurry when they go to the dog rescue center. Mm-hmm. Take some time. Take 2 hours. Spend some time with the dog in their,
yeah,
in their
yeah,
runs. They have runs there to sit there and play with the dog and see if you can bond with it.
Yep.
And also, once you get that dog, you should be ready to spend 2 hours a day training it, because a trained dog is a much better dog than a non-trained dog. They like to be trained. They want to be trained.
Mm-hmm.
They want to please us.
Yep,
exactly.
That's all.
Yeah, and that's true. You're making a huge decision, so don't rush it. Don't do it because Christmas is coming up or a kid's mm-hmm. birthday. Make the serious decision that you're making. This is another big one for a lot of people. From Lucas, asks if you could speak on breeds that are hypoallergenic. In other words, there are some breeds that are don't cause allergies as badly as others, and this mm-hmm. has been an issue for our family.
Yeah, so there are the breeds, mostly those that are mixed with poodles, or the ones that have to be groomed or seem to be a little more hypoallergenic.
Usually so. Like your Bichons and your poodles,
yeah.
Some of the doodle dogs, but you are mixing them, so you could have the hair coat from the golden or the hair coat from the lab,
yeah.
which are definitely allergenic. So some of those lines have gone down long enough that they're okay. Really, though, I think for most people, I come from a family with a lot of asthma and allergies, is spend time with the potential dog you're going to get and see if you are allergic to that dog, because even a Bichon or a poodle could have the potential. It's more than just their hair that can set off the allergies for some folks.
Right. All right, let's go to Sue, who's calling from Eagle River. Sue?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I know an elderly lady who's in her later 80s, and she adopted a shepherd who is a very lively one-plus dog, and the dog seemed to be okay at the beginning, but then has since bitten someone and broken their skin, gets in fights with all the dogs it meets out on the trails and in the yards and in the neighborhood. And so I actually called the Shepherd Society and talked to them about my deep concerns. The dog has knocked this old lady over, mm-hmm. and nothing's been done. And when I had consulted my vet and said, what should I do? And they said, call them. Placement of a dog like that with an older person who, you know, a dog that needs a lot of help and love and training mm-hmm. from an older person is just too much to ask of them. And they won't do anything. And it's just continuing to be aggravating
right.
for everybody involved. What do I do?
Sounds like a problem. I don't know that there's anything we can do about it, but
yeah,
I hear
that
your concern.
Tends to get into some legality sticky
yeah.
zones. However, reaching out, if you know the person well enough, reaching out to her to see, kind of approaching it from, I've noticed that she can be spunky and difficult, and there are some options for you to get her help, because yes, a dog like that, especially that breed at that age, is going to be going through social maturity, so problems she has now could potentially worsen over the next 2 years, and so getting her help from someone like me or another veterinarian in the area who understands dog behavior, even some of the really good, there are several great trainers in Anchorage. There are some that don't use techniques that would really benefit a dog like that. But getting her help now is going to be the best thing for her. It is very concerning that she's bitten someone and broken skin, and that does need to be addressed. And
right.
Even
thanks,
finding another home for somebody that's more active and can exercise and work with her.
Right. Yeah. Thanks, Sue. We're going to keep moving because we have a lot of callers. I don't think we're going to get to everyone. Linda from Eagle River has a question. Linda?
Well, I do. I have a brand new puppy. The person I got the dog from gave me some very expensive dog food, and I went through already, and I'm thinking there has to be some good dog food out there for puppies that don't cost an arm and a leg.
Definitely.
Sure.
Well, I'm a fan of Purina One over-the-counter puppy. Science Diet's a really good diet for puppies. It's just you need to find a puppy food that the dog likes. And if it's a large breed, finding a large breed, small bite, you know, kind of based on what the dog needs. And just be sure if you're changing over dog foods for any age, just do it slowly over at least a week because quick changes can cause GI upset.
All right. Good. Thanks for the question, Linda.
Thank you.
Here's an email with a suggestion that dog shows are also a great way to meet and learn about breeds for new dog owners.
Yeah.
Dog enthusiasts like nothing better than to talk about their dog, so you'll get lots of information that way.
Yeah.
Tony's calling from Anchorage. Tony?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a question concerning cats. So I have this beautiful wraparound deck, and I have just recently had three cats move in the neighborhood, and they're doing their business underneath my porch, and it's just becoming a nuisance because you can smell them, you know, smell it. But how do I deter them from going underneath my porch and doing what they got to do?
One thing would be to add lattice fencing under the porch if that's doable, so they simply can't get under there.
I thought of that, too, but yeah, I didn't
That's probably your most effective method. Everything else will require you to refresh it regularly, but that scarecrow that I talked about earlier, the motion-activated sprinkler system that cats don't particularly like to get wet, but it doesn't hurt them in any way other than says, hey, this is probably not the area I want to do my business. If you can change the substrate, cats tend to like a soft sand. So if you can change that to something firmer that they can't really go under and
rocks
dig in,
or something, yeah,
that would be helpful. Cats supposedly dislike the smell of citrus. My cat Bagheera would disagree. The last time I gave him a lime, he just went ahead and ate it. spraying citrus or a little bit trickier to do would be mothballs that you bury, but that you crush up and bury, but that can also pose some toxic hazards, so you have to be really careful with that.
Well, thanks, Tony. I'm afraid we're out of time. We could probably do this all day, but I really want to thank both our veterinarians for coming in. Really interesting and a lot of great advice. Mandy Seymour was just speaking. She's a vet with VCA, Alaska Pet Care, and also works on behavior of animals. And Dr. Nina Stebbins, a veterinarian at Alaska Veterinary Clinic. My name is Charles Walforth. Our producer is Dave Waldron. And thanks very much for being with us. That's all for today's Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.